Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossoff. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So I'm walking around today, and some kid sees me, and he goes, "Hey, are you Crunch Calhoun?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Did you serve 7 years in prison because your brother, framed you for stealing some art?" And I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "Are you currently working, or were you working as a stuntman again once you got out of prison and just kind of living low?" "Yeah." "Didn't you get back involved with, like, crime and, like, Interpol?" And I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "Didn't you get away with it?" And I just was like, "Yeah."
This kid seems pretty knowledgeable about your career.
Yeah, he pretty much knew everything about me. It was a little scary. I'm like, "How'd you know all about this?" He's like, "Google."
Right. Oh, okay, so you're Crunch Calhoun. Are you related to the infamous Crispy Calhoun?
Who's Crispy Calhoun?
I guess not.
Is that like a cereal mascot, Crispy Calhoun?
Yeah, Crunch and Crispy Calhoun. And also my other co-host, John Lemongood.
So I was walking by the Movies, Films, and Flicks Pilates studio, and just as like Timothy Oliphant was walking out after working on his sleek physique, I think I looked in and I saw Mark. Like, Mark, who were you in there with?
I was in there with my wife, Megan, and I was actually researching tonight's pod while doing a plank for 2 hours.
Ouch. So what you did an unnecessarily long plank to complement the unnecessarily long summer blockbuster sequels that we often have to sit through and suffer through.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they blow up in size. I think the newest Transformers movie is going to be 6 hours long.
Well, let me get the reason why he was doing an unnecessarily long plank is because the Movies, Films, and Flicks Pilates studio also doubles as a high concept restaurant, whereas the tables are actually people doing Pilates.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And so, I mean, you know, I had to sit there for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. You know, I still was able to research, so people didn't bother me that much. I got a little soy sauce on my shirt.
Right.
But I think that was my fault because I was starting to shake by then. But
yeah, I was about to say, I didn't enjoy my sushi as much because Mark was he was kind of struggling a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, and, like, I was getting all sweaty, you know. I mean, once you plank for that long, and, you know, I was using a lot of mind power, too, and that makes me sweat as well.
I was like, Mark, I'm trying to join my spicy tuna roll here.
Yeah, exactly. And I, but, you know, I mean, we got to fund this podcast, you know. Sometimes right. You got to be in the Movies, Films, and Flicks Pilates studio while serving sushi, you know. And sometimes you got to rent out the yoga studio to Timothy Oliphant.
Right.
So that's just what we do.
Now, wait, while John was eating that sushi off of the planking Mark in the Movies, Films, and Flicks Pilates studio and bistro, I got to ask, is this like the early 90s movie with Sean Connery, Rising Sun, where like the wealthy Japanese people are eating off of a naked person sushi? Is Mark naked while doing this plank?
That's nope. Actually where we got the inspiration for the Pilates / sushi.
Because – in that movie, they place the sushi over kind of like the delicate bits. So I got to know, how's Mark doing this plank?
He was planking normally, and we were just eating off, you know. Listen, he was fully clothed. That would have been really awkward, eating sushi.
I mean, you got to. I had a nice sleeveless shirt on like Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
You know, I had jorts on. And, you know, this is a high-class establishment. You know, when you eat food out of somebody, we're clothed.
Yeah. It's just a hygiene issue. Really?
Yeah. I mean, we tried it, but then the health board came in and they're like, "Yeah, this is
no." Gross. He's got to wear a short. He's got to wear a shirt. The jorts are kind of cutting it close, but I mean, we'll allow.
You have like a kelp mankini on.
we eventually moved to that, but then I sweat so much it just fell off.
Yeah.
Oh, no one likes slimy kelp.
Nope. Nope. You can't even use it as a breathing apparatus to attack lions.
Okay, guys. Well, I'm officially grossed out now. So let's begin the podcast like we usually do with listener questions, and I'm going to throw the listener questions to me this week.
Right. Like, is this like just up in the air, kind of like catching it?
Yeah. Hold on. All right, got the first one. All right, Our first listener questions comes from Isaac's Haunted Bee. That's a good name. Like, what's haunted? Like, bee. Okay.
So I actually know that guy, and the bee is for beard. Like, his it's Isaac's Haunted Beard.
Was Isaac's Haunted Beard already taken?
I don't know, but like.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to this question. Does your horror corner take place in a corner? If not, would you consider it? I guess this question is directed to you, Mr. Lovingood.
So, yeah, he's referring to John's horror corner.
How did that come about?
How did John's horror corner come about?
Yeah.
You know, I honestly don't remember. Was that your idea or was that my idea?
I think you and we were posting, you were just kind of adding to the site, and everyone thought I was writing all the reviews. So I'm like, why don't we call it John's Horror Corner?
Like something like that. Like, yeah, it's like John's Horror Nook was taken. So yeah. I took the corner next to the nook.
So you're not actually sitting in a corner watching horror movies and writing reviews all day?
You know, sometimes I actually am. Right now I'm sitting in the corner of my office, but I mean, honestly, like, would I choose for my horror corner to take place in a corner? And the answer is like, no, that's kind of terrifying. No one wants to be in a corner during a horror. The corner is the last place you want to be trapped.
No one puts Lemon Good in the corner.
Like, no one puts John in. No. Like, Insidious, that red man, he was hiding in the corner. Things hide in the corner that are bad. That red demon dude in that dream where he was, like, pointing at the kid in the bed. And, like, what Blair Witch, the end of Blair Witch.
Oh, yeah.
Don't nobody want to end up in that corner.
That's a terrible corner.
Yeah.
Right, I do not want to end up in a corner. Mark, would you want to be in a corner for your movies?
You know, the only good thing about a corner is if you're looking out, no one can get behind you. You know what I mean?
You know what? You know what? If it was a Rocky movie, I'd want to get behind you and be in your corner.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. If Mickey was in your corner, like, you wouldn't mind being in that corner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if Levin Good was kind of telling me to left, right, you know, I could box some ghosts.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound like a weird story, but when I was living in Korea, I had this tiny apartment. It was big. You know, I'd washer, dryer, bathroom, all that kind of stuff. Sink. But, you know, sometimes you get, like, freaked out if you're living in a big house. But, like, I loved my apartment because if I ever heard a noise, I would just – all I have to do is, like, swivel my head a little bit. I'm, like, all clear. So it's like, is anybody in here with me? No, no one's in here with me.
You were like the Navy SEAL of kids afraid of shit under their bed.
Yeah. But like, you know, it just took that. It was that easy to kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm safe. I'm fine.
All right. So why don't we try to find a replacement for John's Horror Corner? Maybe, John, we can find you a – we can call it John's Horror Pagoda. John's Horror Pavilion.
Wait, is a pagoda – wasn't that from Half-Baked where it's just kind of like a store with like half – like. A third filled shells?
Yeah. Interesting. Or a John's Horror Pavilion, like a night in the park or something.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Like, do they have like mimosas at this lovely pavilion?
If you want, sure.
You know what? When I think about pavilions, I think about like those family get-togethers where you like grill bad hamburgers and hot dogs.
Yeah.
And everyone just gets kind of sweaty.
On those like those really sketchy looking kind of outdoor grills.
Yeah. Ugh. What about Loft? John's Horror Loft?
John's
but that
horror
seems like
loft.
he's haughty. Like, we don't want a haughty horror writer.
John's Horror Patio.
Yeah, like Michael Myers is going to throw me off of the top of that loft.
John's Horror Patio.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's just sitting on that swing.
I mean, patios sound nice.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's too peaceful sounding.
Yeah.
Like, if I picked a different genre, I'd want to be like John's Fantasy Adventure Balcony. I wonder if I could see Falcor the Luck Dragon like flying through the air from my Fantasy Adventure Balcony.
Yeah. Atreyu!
John's Romantic Comedy Water Slide.
Ooh.
He's watching Love Actually while going down a 50-foot water slide.
You know, I'm really worried about the day that Levingood watches About Time. I don't think you should watch that movie, Levingood.
I've seen that movie.
Oh, you watch About Time?
Was that the...
Wait. Which one was that?
About the time-traveling father and son?
Oh.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's really cute.
Oh, okay. It didn't get you?
For some reason, I thought that was the...
Get me hell? Like Mike Myers would get me?
No, like... No, like, you and your dad are really close, so I figure you watching that, like, that movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, all movies like that kind of choked me up a little bit. It was really sweet.
For a second there, I thought you were talking about that Justin Timberlake movie.
In Time.
In Time. That's what it was.
Or that Johnny Depp movie.
Oh, wait, what's that? Oh, Nick of Time.
Nick of Time.
Or the time
and his character's name was Nick.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
That was actually a really good movie.
Was it?
I think we've kind of slightly answered that question, right?
We answered a lot of related questions.
I feel like we answered other questions except the main question.
But let me tell you something. I do think that John has a certain incredibly non-mainstream horror review corner held down. Like, that's your world right there. Like, you got that on lock. So, like, you know, you got a corner of the horror film stratosphere, you know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean, Levin Good?
You know, I remember a while ago, like, Mark was calling me the horror czar, and then, like, after a while I realized, oh my gosh, there's this other guy called the horror czar, and he's been called it, like, before – he's been called that since before Mark called me the horror czar. And, like, and I got John's Horror Corner, right? And it turns out that there's a John's Corner movie review site.
John's Corner?
It's just called John's Corner, though. It doesn't sound good to me. For some reason, I think John's Horror Corner works and John's Corner doesn't. But there was a John's Corner that predated me. But unlike Horror Czar, I'm holding my ground. I'm clinging to my corner here. And I'm going to keep John's Horror Corner. I don't care if John's Corner is over there. John's Horror Corner is on the opposite side of the damn room. It's like Apollo Creed's son versus whoever he's going to fight with Rocky training him in that upcoming movie. Like,
yeah. Oh, John's Horror Corner is here to stay. And so is the Leviathan.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
So right. I love what you said about, you know, the horror Leviathan surfs the waves while watching Hellraiser 3. But the romantic comedy slide watches Love Actually while going down slides.
I love this scene.
Tampa Typhoon.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Isaac Swanaby, for that wonderful question.
Yeah, Isaac Swanaby Beard from Twitter. Love that guy.
Right. Okay. On to our second listener question from at the Dark Hours. What makes a bad movie enjoyable?
Oh, God, so many things.
Nash, Chris Klein from Street Fighter.
Right. Okay, well, Chris. Maybe we should use, like, one bad movie as an example that's really enjoyable. Just pick one, guys.
Like, I think I'm the only one here who's seen Zombievers.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, we did.
You saw Zombievers? Oh, that's right. We talked about it.
We did a podcast on it.
That's right. We did a whole podcast about it. Let's ignore the fact that I just said that.
Okay.
So Zombievers, like, because they're... Well, in general, there are bad movies that are not self-aware, and we just laugh at them because they're trying and failing so far off that we enjoy it. But then there are the bad movies that are deliberately bad, these self-aware ones like Zombievers. And then I think that we just kind of delight in the smartly deliberate stupidity of it, mm-hmm. I guess. You know what I mean?
There's a thin line, though. Like, Zombievers walked it. It chewed the... You know, never mind. Try the veal. But sometimes when movies try to be bad, at like Sharknado, like I've never enjoyed a second of those or the mega shark versus giant three-toed sloth. They know they're terrible. And so, like, they're just going on, like, title. And I feel like, you know, Zombievers was good. That's a good example. But I feel like that's such a tough line to cross when you're trying to make a bad movie. Like, I think people miss 90% and hit 10% when you're trying to make a bad movie.
Now, did you not like Sharknado? Because I like Sharknado.
I turned them all off in like 20 minutes. Because it was trying to be bad. And it was like, hey, we're bad. Ha, ha, ha. But, like, you know, like movies like The Room and like, oh, my gosh. I mean, just movies where they're done with the intention of being good. So like Troll 2, The Room, Miami Connection, Street Fighter, The Legend of Chung Lee with Nash turning in the worst performance ever, or Sharks in Venice with Stephen Baldwin, where he has a jogging double and he has a line that says, I can't talk, I'm bleeding. And but like, I feel like they were trying to make good movies and they were terrible. And I think that's what makes it really enjoyable for me.
So you appreciate the effort that goes involved.
Yeah. And it's like a real earnestness to it. And they're really bad. I think that makes them doubly as bad and just as enjoyable.
It's like they know that the movie's not going to turn out great, but they still put in 100% anyway because they still want the product to turn out great.
No, I think they know the movie. They like The Room and like Troll 2 and Birdemic. They thought they were making great movies.
Really? So when like someone got the script for Zombievers, they was like, "Oh, yeah. This has a chance for an Oscar."
Well, no, not Zombievers, but they knew that was going to be bad and that worked.
Yeah. I don't know. Like bad movies, it's just as subjective as, you know, good movies or comedies. Like everybody has a different idea of what a bad movie is, really. And I just, for me, it's just whatever, I have a lot of fun watching it. If it looks like, you know, the filmmakers are having fun with the movie, then I'm going to have fun too, really. And it's hard for me to define, like, you know, what it is that, like, makes them look like they're having fun, really.
I'll tell you what. When the director is behind the camera and he's giving directions to a topless woman covered in fake blood with a fake, like, what is it? With her teeth about to be pushed through, like, as she turns into a were-zombiever or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like and the director is probably just, like, giggling and trying to keep his shit together so that it doesn't come up through the boom in the sound recording. Like, that's when you know it's a deliberately, wonderfully bad movie.
Yeah.
Or, like, this is going to sound weird, but Mummy 3, The Curse of the Dragon Emperor, Tomb Emperor.
I'm sure they were trying really hard to make that good.
Yeah, but for me, like, it's not a good movie, but it's so, like, plucky, and everyone's just moving along, and it's like, boom, 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 boom. And I think it's, like, just a cheeky little throwback that's not good, so it's not a good movie. But I don't know, I have fun with it. Like, I think that's what Lazavath, like, I feel like people are having fun with that film. And, like, I don't know, I felt it.
Those Yetis were throwing bad guys like the space bounty hunter in Critters was throwing bowling balls.
Dude, and I was sitting there going, Yetis! Because you guys know I love Yetis.
Those things were awesome.
Go ahead. Yeah, one of my all-time favorite bad movies that I have probably the most fun watching every time I watch it is Idle Hands with Devin Sawa and Seth Green.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's a bad movie. There's nothing about that movie that's good. But for some reason,
there's something about that movie that's very good.
I just have so much fun watching it. Like the scenes where he's just like trying to like just try to fight off his hand, or like or the scenes where he's just getting stoned with his buddies. It's just like, I don't know. I just have so much fun watching that movie.
Yeah, it's like a little B movie that knows what it is.
Right.
And like, I don't know. It's all right. So how about this? We're doing a triple header: a movies, films, and flicks triple header. We each got to pick one bad movie.
Right.
What bad movie would you pick?
Well, I'll go with Idle Hands. Since I just
Idle Hands. Levengood?
Oh, God.
Is that the one with George Burns?
Yeah.
No, that's not my choice. That was actually a really good movie. I wouldn't be good at picking a bad movie. I don't know. Love in the Time of Monsters, just because I saw it recently.
All right, Love in the Time. And then I would go with Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
There you go.
Oof.
Because that performance by Chris Klein is next world awesome.
It's legendary.
Yeah. I mean, no one knows about it, but it's legendary.
It should be.
Only legendary. People who listen to this podcast know about it.
That's right.
All right. That at the Dark Hours. Thank you so much for that wonderful listener question. I think we more than slightly answered it. I think we kind of answered it, right?
Kind of answered that one.
I mean, we did give answers.
Yeah. They were related to the question at hand, so...
Do you think if we were given like a yes or no question, we could answer it totally?
No.
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 I refuse. I refuse to just say yes or no.
Yes, but maybe no.
Like, if we ask for listener questions and you give us a yes or no question, you can rest assured that we will not air that question.
Or maybe we should. Maybe we should and just like not like give a yes or no.
Well, you see, yes or no is so subjective.
All right. I think that does it for listener questions for now. Time to move on to our first topic of the day. Levengood, I think you got the topics this week, right?
I do. And all of our topics are related to I'm calling it doomed sequels and resurrected franchises. And that's not to say that all the sequels that we're going to talk about are necessarily doomed. But a lot of times when sequels get bigger and better, as they the producers would like to think, they end up getting doomed. Mark even made reference to the Transformers movies at one point. And you know, as they got bigger, they kind of fell apart and we stopped caring. And it's happened to Die Hard. It's happened to the Transformers. It happened a little bit to Pirates in the Caribbean. And
a big bit. I mean, it's still the Transformers and Last Pirates movies each made $1 billion, but they were some of the worst films I've ever seen in my life, which, you know, no one really cares because they did so well. But that Last Pirates movie, I don't think I've ever been more annoyed. Like, I just sat there glum.
Well, so first I wanted to talk about Guillermo del Toro's projects, because over the last few years, Guillermo del Toro is one of those people where you don't hear a rumor about his movie and 6 months later they're filming, and 6 months after that you see the movie, like it is with most movies. For some reason with Guillermo del Toro, everything takes a decade to blossom. Everything takes forever. Yeah.
And then everything, it falls through for him too a lot.
Right, yeah. I mean, we've got Pacific Rim. It was big. Sequel, Hellboy, that franchise. I don't know. I guess I love Guillermo del Toro. I wish that every rumor I ever heard him attached to became a movie. One thing that they started talking about immediately after Pacific Rim was released in theaters was a sequel. And it turns out this is just about the only rumor he's ever been attached to that is seeing a timely fruition. Because I'm pretty sure they're going to start production like really soon, like in a couple months.
Yeah, because that's all it takes for him to write the script. He just sits there and slams his hand on a computer and writes, like, robots, nope. robots, bad dialogue, robots,
boom. And, well, Pacific Rim did fairly well at the box office, right?
I think at the
international box office, it did really well.
Yeah, it made $309 million international, and it made $100 million in the U.S. and it made $309 million internationally.
Right. Wait, it only made $100 million in the U.S. Pacific Rim did?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
wow.
It wasn't a big hit here.
No, whereas in Japan, where they have a history of believing in giant monsters leveling cities, they were considering this like preventative research.
Yeah, you know what's funny about Pacific Rim is Del Toro was supposed to make The Hobbit, and he spent like years in New Zealand getting everything ready, and then he got dropped from that. And then he went to make in the mountains of madness.
Lovecraft, yeah. Cthulhu.
He was going to make an R-rated Tom Cruise movie, and then that fell through. And then a week later, they're like, Pacific Rim's hitting the theaters, and you're like, what? Like, how do we? Huh? Like, I think someone said, hey, you know, Guillermo del Toro's making a giant monsters versus giant robots fighting movie, and I was like, what? Yeah, like it just happened so fast. I think the studios felt bad for him. They're like, just give Del Toro some money.
Yeah.
Well, so now with part two coming out, there are all these rumors about the plot. And you said he was mashing his fingers on the keyboard. I just imagine these fat fingers like hitting all these buttons at the same time. But, sorry, Del Toro. I don't think you listen. But so I don't know. We're hoping that he isn't going to do this again. And even though, yes, I'd go see it, I'd go see slightly different Jaegers fight slightly different kaiju. I would. I'd be there opening day, and I'd like it. But they're saying that he's not going to do that. They're saying he's going to explore the rift where these monsters probably are. Evidently, Charlie Hunnam didn't die when he set off that nuke on their kaiju when they went through the portal, because he's cast in it.
Yeah,
I don't remember the ending of that movie.
They went through the rift in his Jaeger, and they basically set it to be a bomb, like a nuclear bomb.
Oh yeah,
like he had to go down with it.
Like, can I just get something off my chest here?
That you don't think that he would have survived being at ground zero of a nuclear explosion?
Well, that. But, like I have a very weird relationship with Del Toro, because I love Kronos, Devil's Backbone. I loved Pan's Labyrinth. He did great work with the Hellboy films. Mimic was okay, but there's a lot of studio interference. But lately, man, like between like his producing efforts with like being a Del Toro fan is like being on a roller coaster. And like it's like you get news, you get that, you get that. But like, I don't know. Then he made, you know, Pacific Rim I wasn't a fan of. And then The Strain, I think, is one of the biggest pieces of garbage I'll ever watch. But I've watched every episode and I'll continue to do so. But like I feel it's an up and down thing being a fan of his. And so like that's just what I want to get off my chest, guys.
Yeah,
I'm not taking pot shots because, you know, I had the Hellboy 4-disc Blu-ray, you know, DVD with every extra on the planet. And I've listened to all his commentaries. But, you know, I'm listening to it like Pacific, like, so I have a very, I'm a fan of his. So I feel like I can kind of take some pot shots. You know what I mean?
You've earned it. You put in your time, suffered through every episode of The Strain.
Oh, gosh.
Which, by the way, the first two episodes, I was thinking, This is cool. Like, where are we going with this? And then it basically turned out that he made his Blade 2 Reaper vampires into zombies.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
And then there was that rock and roll dude, like that goth guy, right, with the long black hair and his contact lenses and shit. If you put him next to Prince Nuada, the bad guy in Hellboy 2, they almost look like the same guy with some hydrogen peroxide.
Whoa.
And then, as it turns out, the guy who played Prince Nuada is the same guy, Luke Goss, who played the evil Prince Reaper vampire in Blade 2. And the way that they showed the carapace, like the thorax of the dissected Reaper vampire in Blade 2, and how its heart functioned like a machine, reminded me of the Kronos. And then you've got that bad guy Cronin from Hellboy, who is like a wind-up evil like thing, and he wound up his heart, which also made me think of the Kronos. And Cronin had these wrist blades, which are just like the wrist blades on the on the Golden Army mecha things, which are just like the wrist blades that Blade used that insert that weird serum to fight the Reaper vampires. Like, all of his movies are kind of the same. Like, they all overlap. Like, each movie overlaps more than one other movie. You think it's kind of strange.
You think that's intentional? Or just, like,
yeah, just a weird coincidence? I mean, like, you know, I think you watch certain films, like a Spielberg film, J.J. Abrams film, a Wes Anderson film, and there's certain DNA in all the films that are almost the same. So I just think Del Toro has that kind of that stuff, that theme that runs throughout his movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could find a lot of other like correlations if you went to his other movies. Just interesting. Even the tongue of those strain zombie things is like the tongue of Samael, that Cthulhuian monster that was summoned and then replicated itself in Hellboy 1.
Jeez Louise.
Wow. Like, there's all these it's interesting. But at the same time, like, I say all this stuff, this isn't negative criticism. I love it.
Yeah.
These are all really, really cool ideas that are being shown in slightly different iterations. And I think it's really cool. So I want to see him make everything. I'm looking forward to Pacific Rim 2.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this Hellboy 3, which they say will only happen if Pacific Rim 2 knocks it out of the park. That's the rumor I read.
So this Pacific Rim, I read recently that it's going to take place years after the battles. And there's like peace. And it's how people are like dealing with all these giant robots and how they're like using them for other deeds other than like protecting the Earth. It's like Jurassic World, you know, they need more. So they create like this crazy dinosaur that kills everybody. So like everyone's kind of being jerky with their robots and everything like that. And then the kaijus come back and then there's more battles.
Yeah, I'll be honest. You know, when I was trying to think of trying to imagine what a Pacific Rim 2 might be like, I was kind of hoping like we get like, we go to space and get like kaiju the size of planets.
Oh.
Just like, I just want to imagine like a kaiju like taking Jupiter and just throwing it like a big just big monster.
You know, between the sword that Gypsy Danger had and then you put it in space, you basically have Voltron at that point.
Exactly. Ooh. I that's what I want. I want a Voltron movie. Is that too much to ask for?
Can I ask you guys a very serious question?
No.
How many how many portals were there in Pacific Rim? There's just one, right?
Well, so it's one portal, or it's one dimensional rift that shifted in location.
It shifted in location?
Yeah, so they weren't coming out the same place every time. It's just that later in the movie, they were able to predict where they'd come out.
I thought they could predict what time it was going to come out.
Were they always coming out the same place?
I think so. And then they could predict that when it was going to come out.
So for okay, me, maybe that's it. Maybe
yeah,
that's
so
it.
For me, it's like, hey, if there's one area where these monsters are coming out, instead of building a wall that's going to be incredibly ineffective, just put a bunch of stuff over that hole. Put a net that the thing flies up into, gets stuck and then stab it with the Voltron sword.
These different countries all had their own Jaegers. Like, well, then why not just have all those Jaegers in one spot just crowded around this exit and just beat up on them?
Like, play whack-a-mole.
Like, why are we going one-on-one early in the movie or two-on-one? Why aren't we just going five-on-one, just all in? It's not like we were going to lose.
There's no code of honor here.
Like, you know what could have worked if they were like, our country, we're working by ourselves. Like, we're not teaming up with the Americans. You know what I mean? So it's like, guys, we got to team up. No. But, like, just surround it with a net. Like, put a missile right over it. They're going to blow up every time they come up. Yeah. Like, right? And, like, it's just, I don't know. So for me, it's like, put a huge metal plate over it. And then, like, people's defense to that is always like, yeah, it's about monsters fighting robots. It doesn't need to be smart. But I'm like, it kind of does. Like, and Del Toro's done smart stuff before. Yeah. So that's why I kind of had a feeling he wrote it in a night.
You see, the one thing that I said by accident would have totally made sense to make that plot fly a little better then.
Yeah.
It's an interdimensional rift. Time-space is not linear. It's shifting in location. They come out a different place every time.
Boom.
Solved.
So let me get it. You said that if Pacific Rim 2 is successful, and you know it most likely will be, there's a chance Hellboy 3 will get made?
Well, I don't know because the context that I read this, and this was a week or so ago, and it was just a line where when Guillermo del Toro was asked about Hellboy 3, he said, look, no form of crowdfunding is going to allow us to do a suitable Hellboy. We need a real budget. And for that to happen, Pacific Rim is going to have to be big. And so I don't know if $100 million like Pacific Rim 1 domestic gross will cut it for that or not.
Yeah, they need to kind of double the budget. And like the first Hellboy did not do well in the theaters.
No.
It did okay. But
it did well in my heart, Mark.
Exactly. Okay. But the thing is, it did really good on DVD.
Yes.
And in my heart. But see, the thing is, DVDs aren't the be-all end-all anymore. Like back in the day, I had the 4-disc Hellboy DVD. That's when they were big. I think this was kind of like pre-Redbox, Netflix was around, but like people had to go buy this movie and share it. And it was actually like a kind of a big like cult phenomenon on DVD. And then the second one came out, and then it did get killed because Dark Knight opened a week after it. But like, I mean, it opened okay. It did well internationally, but it didn't do quite as well on DVD. So they're thinking about the...
Because Hellboy 2 was a huge jump, in my opinion, in terms of story, production quality, and just creativity. Everything about Hellboy 2, which is superior to the first
world building, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, I loved it. It's just, I think people sort of forgot about it because there was a little bit of a gap between them. You know, Dark Knight happened a week afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so I really think that Hellboy is a case of like the vocal minority. Like people online are super passionate about it, but we see what happens with like snakes on a plane.
Yeah.
And like, you know, all these people are like, we need it. And then like, these are the same kids pirating it at home. But, if Pacific Rim makes $300 million in the United States box office, I see them, you're right, I could probably see them greenlighting Hellboy, but with like the diminishing returns and also it's been a while since Hellboy 2 came out. And so with Marvel and DC churning out all their action films, like they'd almost have to reintroduce Hellboy a little bit because it's been, what, 6 years, something like that, since the last one came out?
Hellboy 2 might have been like 2007?
Yeah. Yeah. It's 2007, 2008, something like that. So, I mean, they'd have to like reintroduce the character again. And so, I mean, even though the show plays on FX a lot and everything, and a lot of people even admit that it's a shame that these are great films. But like, I don't know, Forbes, the online publication, they had an article like, why it's okay that Hellboy 3 won't happen. Like, they're saying
there is no answer for that being okay that it doesn't happen.
They're just talking about Hollywood shelling out money. And they're even more, and even though it's a trilogy, they're even more skittish after like Tomorrowland and movies like that, where I know they're original ideas, but like these weird properties aren't doing too well in the theater. So I think they're kind of straying away from the Hellboy type aesthetic.
Such a huge cult following, though.
So,
guys, we had to be honest with ourselves. If Hellboy 3 did get made and did get released in theaters, would it do well at the box office?
It would do probably $40 million the opening weekend.
Yeah.
I think it would do better than either of the other two Hellboys, just because everyone who saw the past Hellboys is going to go.
Yeah, but like Genesis only made 40. Terminator Genesis.
Hold on now. But that had a deplorable budget. Yeah. When I saw that trailer, I thought it was a sci-fi movie of the week.
Oh no, it was like it was a $190 million movie. It was really expensive.
Did they pay Schwarzenegger $180 million and use the other $10 million to make the movie? Because it looked terrible.
Yeah, and like I don't know. But and then Ant-Man only made 60, which is a big Marvel property. So you have these movies with big name recognition only pulling in 40 to 60 million. So I don't think Hellboy 3 would quite pull in as much as like a Marvel property or, you know, I think 40 million is a safe bet.
Yeah. You think they should just go to TV route, make a TV series?
Oh, no. No, I need it. I need those awesome monsters and that big world. I need full scale third movie before I go to TV. I've been waiting for that movie. I've been counting on that movie.
Yeah. Well, we know Ron Perlman. Is definitely game, because I think it was I think he was kind of campaigning for like a little crowdfunding action for Hellboy 3.
There was always interest in any interview ever after Hellboy 2 of doing a Hellboy 3, but the only serious talk really started I want to say 6 or 8 months ago when Perlman was posting all over the internet about crowdfunding it,
right?
Which wasn't realistic. There's but no it was way. Good it got attention on.
I mean, the most that they've raised so far was like Veronica Mars, which did $6 million. And Pacific Rim's budget was $190 million.
Right.
So a Hellboy movie would have to be – I think the second Hellboy's budget was $85 million. So with inflation, it would have to be $100 million.
Can you imagine like the reward like kind of pledges on a possible Hellboy 3? Because you know when you like donate like a certain amount, you get like a little reward.
Yeah.
They go from like $5 all the way up to like – couple thousands, like maybe.
I want to sit in Ron Perlman's lap while he's in a Santa suit.
If you don't donate $1 million, that's what you get.
You get to write, direct, and produce a good Del Toro movie.
If you give them $100 million, you get to name the movie whatever you want. Hellboy 3, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh man, I'm trying to think of a really good name. Hellboy 3, Fart.
Hellboy 3.
Gaw.
The Quickening.
Hellboy 3. I can't talk. I'm bleeding.
All right, guys. Ugh. I think...
So...
What? Go ahead. Loving good.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, like, Ron Perlman, though, he does do, like, the world building and the storytelling and this horror fantasy notion so well, and he's always been touching on those Cthulhuian elements very clearly with the Samael character. There are these subaquatic things, these other worlds and things. Like he touches on them quite a bit more in the first movie than the second.
Yeah,
and like I feel like there's something about the new movie. The trailers for Crimson Peak, now that we're seeing appropriately length trailers, the 90-minute or the 90-second trailers or 2-minute trailers, like, sure, he's done his Pan's Labyrinth, his Orphanage, even his Afraid of the Dark, Kronos, all that stuff. But there's something about this movie. It looks grandiose in scale, right? It's got a serious cast. I think it's R-rated. Can someone correct me on that? It's R-rated?
R-rated.
Okay, but despite it being R-rated, there's something about it that I swear makes me feel like if Disney did an R-rated horror movie.
But, I mean, I think about Pacific Rim and the Hellboy films. They weren't exactly the most violent, visceral-looking creations. You know, like he was earlier on with Mimic and Devil's Backbone and Mimic – oh, I'm sorry, Pan's Labyrinth. But maybe he's kind of learning a visual aesthetic from the Hellboy movies and – and the strain. Maybe he I see what you're saying, but does that make sense? Maybe he's drawing on his Hellboy.
Well, don't get me wrong. Like, Hellboy had a bit of the emotion that we get when we first saw Diagon Alley in the Harry Potter world. Like, it's kind of magical. You love being exposed to this new world during the first Harry Potter when you first see the school, Hogwarts. It kind of takes you there, the Matrix. But Hellboy did it, especially in part two with the troll city. Like,
the troll village?
It didn't feel childish at all. It didn't feel like a childlike amazement to me. It felt serious, partly silly at times, but whereas this preview for Crimson Peak, it really makes me think of if you put Haunted Mansion through an R-rated filter, but you could still recognize the Disney Haunted Mansioniness of it. Like, the wispiness of those hands of that ghostly thing you see in the trailer, like, it looks creepy, but there's something about it. Like, there's an electricness to the black of that voidal wispiness that makes me think of it. And the scale of the house and the costumes, they all stick out a little too much to me, like an Alice in Wonderland way.
Interesting. Yeah,
it looks interesting. Don't get me wrong. I don't want this to sound like I'm panning this movie. I'm very excited to see it.
Dude, but like Tom Hiddleston and Jessica Chastain and Mia Wasikowska. She's a great actress.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know her name either.
Charlie Hunnam's in it too, right?
Yeah, Charlie Hunnam, and like, I mean, I love them. Like, these are great actors from Zero Dark Thirty, Stoker. Just great actors, and I like that. I read an interview with Chastain where they really built this big house on a stage, so it's going to be very practical, effecty with the CGI. And I don't know. I'm looking. You know, maybe the previews aren't showing everything, but I'm looking forward to a little R-rated. You know, I'm looking forward to him going back to his Pan's Labyrinth. But also, I mean, Pan's Labyrinth and those movies that he made, he didn't have that much of a budget, so they looked a little bit more grimy. It wasn't as immaculate. So maybe, you know what I'm thinking? I think Del Toro works best without a huge budget.
It forces his creativity, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Pan's Labyrinth, there's things I can never shake. I mean, that's, you know, that had the budget of Pacific Rim's craft service, you know, so... Like, well,
Hellboy 2 was it had a decent budget. I think it was definitely more than the first Hellboy.
Yeah, but and, I mean, it was $85 million. Yeah. I mean, but if you think about, like, you know, these movies coming out now, they like Battleship was $250 million. Some of these new Marvel films are over $300 million. Man of Steel was $200 million plus. So he didn't have, you know, he had that budget, but he didn't have quite that budget. Does that make sense?
I get what you mean.
You think maybe he just, when he has the means, he just gets creatively lazy? Like, he just, like, not lazy, but, like, he just kind of doesn't try as hard?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any anybody checking him, too, because he has such a big budget. I think they kind of let him have free rein on some things. But I feel like you do have to be thrifty a little bit on these smaller films, and you do have to think a little bit more about your set design. And
it's just hard to imagine him making Pacific Rim on a small budget, though. Like, that's a very
big
idea.
I'm almost tempted to argue the opposite, because when you get a really, really big movie, the studio execs, they get nervous. The producers, they get nervous, and it may keep him from being as creatively inspired as he wants to be. And all these interesting ideas that he has, they may not let him do all the things that he wants to do. And maybe on the lower budgets, when so much isn't at stake, they're willing to let him have that artistic license and do these crazy things.
You know, I'm kind of wondering, what if Crimson Peak had the same budget as Pacific Rim?
Oh my gosh!
How amazing would that be?
It would have Tom Cruise and Tom Hiddleston's role.
But I do think though that a lot of the best movies, like huge budget movies that didn't have checks and balances, have turned out to be some of the biggest bombs. Like Waterworld, Battleship, John Carter. Some of these movies that people do get free rein on and huge budgets, those are some of our biggest modern day flops. Ishtar,
Tomorrowland,
The Postman, Tomorrowland, 13th Warrior. And I like some of these movies, but I think these people were handed the keys to the kingdom. And I think it works both ways, Levengood. I think you're absolutely right. I just think it's. I don't know. I think Del Toro works best with a little budget, maybe.
Because I've seen, like, you can go online and find, like, sketches of his, like, some that were released, obviously, deliberately. But I have a feeling that he didn't phone it in for Pacific Rim. I want to say that he probably wanted to do more. Maybe he decided himself it was too risky with a big budget movie. I don't know. But, I got to say, maybe I'm just giving him too much credit, but I don't want to believe that. I think that it was pragmatism or someone else's, the studio's nervousness that kept him from being more creative in Pacific Rim. And Pacific Rim still had a lot of great components to it.
Yeah, I mean, and Charlie Hunnam did an interview about the Pacific Rim 2, and he said that he really hopes that it focuses more on characters this time. He kind of took a jab at Pacific Rim. And I don't know, if you think about the movie, right? Like, you remember Jaggers and, like, all that kind of stuff. And, like, you remember... I think the aliens had more personalities than the humans did. Like, I don't know. Like, there was, like, that ape alien. Like, I don't know. They were kind of cheeky. They would hide. And so, I don't know. I just think, I don't know. I just hope that the second one, you like the people in, you know, the robots, and you know who they are. Because, like, remember the robot versus alien fight on Aliens with Ripley and the Queen Alien? Like, you were invested in that because you liked the character.
Right.
And I never felt that in this movie. I just thought, oh, this is like really, this is like, you know, this is like eating Skittles. Like, it tastes, you know, looks beautiful. I don't know. It was like a junk food. It just,
right. You know what it was? Instead of being like a prize fight where you're invested in who's going to win, to me, this was like a really awesome bar fight. I don't know either of these people. Yeah. I don't care who wins. I just want to see a good fight. Like, that's all. It just looked cool on screen. And that's how I felt when I was watching Pacific Rim. I didn't care. I didn't give a shit when they were like, oh, does the Australian father and his son live after their Jaeger got destroyed? I don't care. I just wanted to see the fight.
I want to go to a bar where a kaiju and Jaeger are just, like, drinking, like, way too much. And they're just like, they start to get annoyed of each other. It's just like,
is there enough alcohol on the planet to get a class 5 kaiju and a Jaeger drunk?
Yeah. I mean,
depends on the bar. If you go to like a college town, maybe. Although the alcohol will be watered down.
I think Patrick Swayze could bounce them out of the bar.
All right. I'll tell you what.
Quick question, guys. Do you think the world's most interesting man could pilot a Jaeger by himself?
Sure.
No, the world's interesting man is...
You just got a nosebleed.
The world's interesting man is the Jagger.
Ooh.
Oh. All right, guys. I think now is a good time to take a break. I think during that break, we can figure out how much alcohol is necessary to get both a kaiju and a Jagger drunk enough to start a really, really raucous bar fight.
How big is this bar?
It's bigger than a dive bar. We'll put it.
The bar is the Black Sea.
Yes. We'll see you guys in a little bit. Hey guys, John here to tell you a special offer from Audible.com. If you go to audibletrial.com/shark, you can sign up for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook of your choice. Now, since we're talking about Guillermo del Toro, one of the books you can download for free is The Strain, co-written by Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan. Narrated by Ron Perlman himself, The Strain tells the story of an epic battle between man and vampire. It's the first installment of an exciting trilogy. Now remember, if you want to download The Strain, or if you want to choose from 108,000 other audiobooks, all you have to do is just go to audiblechild.com/shark.
Hey, podcast listeners, Robert here, along with Kyle.
What's up?
And John.
Hey.
We're here to talk to you about a little podcast that we do called Shark Dropper.
Yeah.
What do we talk about in Shark Dropper?
Oh, all kinds of things. Kyle, name one of them.
Oh, geez, walking across America.
John, name another.
Ooh, video games.
No, we never talk about that.
Yeah, that's stupid.
So if you want to listen to Shark Dropper, don't listen for the video games.
We talked about video games last week.
You know what? Just don't listen to John at all.
John, just don't listen to him talk.
Okay.
Yeah. that's a good rule of thumb.
But if you want to listen to me and Kyle talk, along with John intermittently, but really don't listen to that part.
Hi, guys.
Go visit sharkdropper.com because you can find everything there.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. All right, gentlemen. We've broken out the calculators. Broken out the abacuses, done some calculus, carried the ones. how much alcohol does it take to sufficiently inebriate a kaiju and a Jaeger?
One Lake Erie.
One Lake Erie full of...
Absinthe.
Absinthe. Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, dude, oh. They're going to end up, like, humping a redwood.
is that what they're fighting? The kaiju's humping a redwood and the Jaeger's just, like, getting jealous? Oh, yo.
They're basically, like, it's mate competition.
I just... Ugh. Absinthe is, like, the worst thing ever, by the way. I don't know if you ever had it. I'm sorry to any Absinthe fans listening to it right now, but I don't know how you guys do it. That stuff is just like, ugh. It's like, the only thing I can think of that's worse than Absinthe is just gin. And honestly, I don't know which one is worse.
Oh, no, man, I love gin. A little Hendrix, put some cucumber in it.
Ugh, no.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's time for another listener question.
Next week on Gin Talk, Mark brings up his top five favorite garnishes to put inside a gin.
Yeah. And then John just passes out. All right. This listener question actually comes from our very own Horror Leviathan, John Levingood.
Heyo.
John Levingood asks, how do Sarlaccs mate? The Sarlacc being the pit monster from Return of the Jedi.
Can you guys... I did some research, and...
boy. For this?
Oh, yeah.
Question? You did some research? All right.
We do research on all our questions here. Come on.
You guys, so they reproduce by spores, right? And the female is larger than the male. And the male attaches to the woman. It absorbs her. And then they shoot spores that can survive intergalactic travel. These spores go to certain planets and form. But if one of the spores is eaten by, like, a creature, the spore will eat itself out of the creature. And then they all just form into the ground.
Wait, is this coming from the Star Wars wiki? Like,
yeah, Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's called.
Did you say Wikipedia?
Yeah, Wikipedia.
No, he's not joking. That's what it really is.
But then they're telling me here that they're plant organisms because they found stuff on Boba Fett's helmet. And then they're telling me that they live 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm just picturing a couple of, like, tortoises on top of each other.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of picture like a couple of beached whales, like just aligning their genitals near one another.
You know, they have roots. These guys have roots that collect water and fungi.
I've seen that in the picture, and I kind of viewed that instead of roots, I view it as like the tendrils of a lungfish that, like, they don't have a good grip on anything. I just figured they were stabilizing it in place in case there were ever any shifts from soil erosion or something.
See, like, I thought they were just giant worms, right? I did not
know they were plant-based. Wait, how big are these spores, though? Because these organisms are they make a blue whale look small. They are, like, you could drop a blue whale into a Sarlacc pit. You literally could. So how big is this spore that it's shooting out? Like, is it the size of, like, a beach ball?
I mean, yeah, it would have to be. And what I don't get is how they can survive intergalactic travel. How do they get out of the atmosphere? Does a Sarlacc just go...
Well, you know what it's like? It's like in Starship Troopers when those beetles lift up their butts and they shoot that, like, that lava pellet out and it goes up all the way into space.
See, that makes too much sense. And I can see that in my head. I like the idea of just a Sarlacc pit spitting.
Right.
Almost like it's blowing bubbles. Like, they're just slowly floating up these like beach ball sized spores.
Yeah.
Like, by the hundreds.
But that's no fun. This isn't fun. You know,
well,
like,
okay. I think,
you know what I mean?
It's just your answer was very in-depth and very
impressive. So what if they were really, like, agile, like the claymation sandworms in Beetlejuice, right? Like, what if they were really agile and they got out and kind of like the legend of Paul Bunyan and Babe the Big Blue Ox, like how when they wrestle, they make the mountain formations of the Colorado Rockies. Like, what if when these things, like, mate once every 10,000 years, they create the mountains that are on that planet?
Wow. If the planets are rocking, don't come knocking.
Like, they're straight geoscaping.
Yeah.
Man. What do you got? What's yours, Lazavan?
Okay. I didn't get as in-depth as your answer. To answer the question, how do Sarlaccs mate, my answer was eHarmony. They just do a little questionnaire.
No, no, not not how they meet, how they mate.
No, no, that's there's a process, right?
They got to court each other.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like they're not going to leave the planet because they're all secure in that. They're, like,
yeah.
The way I see it, these Sarlaccs, they're happy. Like they're in their little dirt mound. You know, they're buried in there. They're happy. They're secure. They're not just going to get up and jump ship and leave their good spot where this lizard named Jabba feeds them. Like, they need to know that this person is, you know, their soulmate.
Yeah. You know, it does get lonely. It does get lonely.
I like how you just likened Jabba to a lizard.
I mean, that, he kind of is, right? Like, what is he? Like, he's not...
Pizza.
Yeah. He's a pizza that's gone bad.
Like, well, I don't even know. He's like half snake, half lizard.
He's a, he's like a reptilian slug.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, he's a slug without a shell.
Ooh, I like it.
There you go. All right, Love and Good. Did we answer your question in any sufficient manner?
I think I got some ideas there. Some Paul Bunyan spores,
right?
And, but it just bores me that they sporate like. I don't want
eHarmony. eHarmony.
Let's there we go. I'm going to go on Wikipedia and change it tonight. I'm just going to delete everything and just go eHarmony, bitches.
And this is why we can't use it in college papers. It's because people like you. Right. All right. All right. Time to move on to, well, I think it's just a continuation of the previous topic. Love and Good, what do you have for us?
Well, yeah, I wanted to redirect from Guillermo del Toro and kind of... take a moment to appreciate what has happened to comic book movies in the last decade. I mean, it used to be, okay, here's Spider-Man. Okay, that made money. Let's make two more Spider-Mans. And then every now and then it doesn't work out, and they just start over on these franchises, and it's happening with Fantastic Four. But these Marvel movies, they're making it so that almost every new Marvel movie is some parallel meta sequel to all the other Marvel movies, where they all overlap in some way, almost like the conceptual creature designs in Guillermo del Toro's movie. But all these things overlap, like in one way or another. And the Marvel universe is getting gigantic. And as these movies, again, they get bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of the cast and the budget. Is this really working out for them? What comes to mind is X-Men Apocalypse. And just... With this X-Men franchise, I was so excited about this, right? Because I think back to comic books, Apocalypse is huge. He's like, in comic book history, he's taken the place of gods to the Egyptians. He's like a galaxy ruler. And they got Oscar Isaac from...
Inside Llewyn Davis.
Inside Llewyn Davis and Ex Machina. And so they've got him playing this thing. And I'm thinking, what is it going to look like? What is it going to look like? And just like when I saw Vinnie Jones's Juggernaut, my soul and my dreams were crushed.
Yeah. It's such a fine line to walk between, like, you know, you watch so Fox has all the X-Men and Fantastic Four. Then Marvel has the other ones. But, like, when you see Thanos... Like, he's just sitting in a chair, and he's like a totally CGI'd character. And you're like, this is the most evil character in the world. He just sits in a reclinomatic chair and, like, has other people does his work. And then so you look at Oscar Isaac, who's, like, in full-on makeup, and you're like, I don't buy it. So it's, like, it's a hard win. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, you can't even tell Oscar Isaac is behind that. They're probably going to do something to synthesize his voice.
Yeah.
And so it's basically going to be voiced over like Bane. It brings me back to like my old Tom Hardy argument of why didn't they get someone physically larger to play Bane if Tom Hardy wasn't even speaking it while he was acting it? Like, why didn't they get someone like Nathan Jones, the giant dude from Mad Max and everything, to be the 7 foot tall Apocalypse? And even then, CGI him up like the Hulk or something.
Yeah.
I feel like that. I don't know. I see the images online of Apocalypse, and I feel like this is Apocalypse with terminal cancer.
Yeah. You know what he looks like? You know what I first thought when I saw that picture of Apocalypse? Like, do you guys remember the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie?
Yeah.
I saw pictures of that online.
Yeah, Ivan Ooze. He looks exactly like him. If you're listening right now, just Google
on his head.
Google Ivan Ooze and tell me that's not Apocalypse. It's the same guy. I swear.
And he sticks out like a sore thumb, too, because if you go back to, like, the first X-Men movie, like, they didn't even give him their suits. They just gave him leather suits. Yeah. And, like, I think they've really grounded it in realism. Like, the first one, the second one. And they haven't gone, like, you know, even that Wolverine standalones, he just goes to Japan, battles some stupid villains. You know, the new X-Men movies, they're very grounded in, like, you know, 70s culture, 60s, 70s culture, you know, believable outfits, you know, that fix the law, you know, like, you know, they're mutants, obviously. But then all of that, like, grounded in realism leads to Ivan Ooze.
Yeah, basically. So,
I mean, these movies really are all over the place in quality, too. I feel like X-Men was good. X2 was great. X-Men Last Stand was horrible.
No, wait, you know what, though? That is a terrible movie that when I watched, I knew it was one of the worst things I'd ever seen, but I kind of loved it.
It went through a little bit of a development turmoil, right?
Yeah, they had Matthew Vaughn, he left, and then they had Brett Ratner direct. But, like, all right, so at the end on Alcatraz, why didn't he just throw the bridge on it?
Didn't Brett Ratner do Superman Returns?
No, that was Bryan Singer.
Bryan Singer.
He actually left Last Stand to actually make Superman Returns.
Yeah, and then they killed off Cyclops because he went from X-Men to Superman, James Marsden. But, like, no, the third one was bad with, like, I don't know, Ben Foster is this great actor, but he was Angel for, like, 3 seconds. And then Jean Grey was just, like, a really pouty bodyguard. And there's a scene where a mutant's hunting Wolverine and he has a baseball bat. It's like, what is a baseball bat going to do to Wolverine? And why are you carrying it? Are you like the Sammy Sosa of mutants?
Like, maybe like, Wolverine, like, he's a pitcher.
But, like, oh, the movie's so bad, dude. It's so bad. It's so bad. And then what's the next one?
Then it was First Class.
Oh, no, Origins.
No, it was Origins.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that was a mixed bag, too.
Oh, Wolverine. X-Men Origins Wolverine.
That was a mixed bag, too.
There's only one good character, and that's Ryan Reynolds. He has one good gag in the beginning of it. He's like, take these swords to your ex-girlfriend's wedding and see what happens. Like, that's funny, right? Mm-hmm. And then he disappears for the entire movie, and this is a guy who's known for being funny and quippy, and they sew his mouth shut.
Right.
Yeah, the character, both the character and the guy playing him are both independently known for being full of one-liners. Yeah, they seal his mouth shut because they think that that's clever.
Yeah, and then, you know, there was directing problems on that. They hired the guy who did Tsitsi, which won a Best Foreign Oscar movie, tiny film from South Africa. And then they're like, hey, you directed this $100,000 movie. You want to do a $200 million Wolverine movie? So then, you know, that didn't work, and Joel Silver had to do all the action scenes. And then, what, First Class came out?
That was a decent movie.
That was decent. I don't know. I kind of struggled swallowing being introduced to all these basically new characters, even though they're characters we know. I feel like all these reintroductions, it almost feels like a reboot.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of cheesy, but I like the 60s kind of aspect of it. Like, it just kind of
That was cool, yeah.
Yeah, it was just kind of unique in that own regard.
So. And then what, X-Men... Or Wolverine in Japan.
Yeah. That's not even Wolverine.
That movie had the worst bad guy. It was like this really smug lady in a green dress. And I just was like, you are the worst lady. Get out of here, lady. But there's one cool scene where those crazy. So they're in Japan. So those crazy Yakuza members are hunting down Wolverine, and they're on top of that subway train. And, like, I don't know why these humans are chasing down Wolverine, but Wolverine fakes one of them in the jumping, and he gets leveled by that pole. Like, that was kind of a cool scene. But that movie was a garbage pail.
That the Silver Samurai suit the bad guy's wearing at the end, that actually reminded me of, like, a really boring version of that kind of Super Shredder from the most recent live-action CGI mixed Mutant Ninja Turtle movie.
and then Days of Future Past, which I thought was okay. Everyone loved it, but I just thought it was okay. It was fine.
It was just about as good as First Class.
You know what, though? It didn't have any of the things that annoyed me like First Class did. Like, again, with all the reintroductions, it didn't have that. We met like two new characters. One of them was Quicksilver, and he gave us one of the coolest scenes in that movie. So I totally forgive that introduction.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, this is going to sound weird, but I think the best X-Men films have been the ones where, like, there's kind of a – like, the first one had Magneto, right? And so there wasn't a ton of CGI. The second one had Stryker and, what was it, Mystique? Is that Mystique? Yeah, or Lady Witchblade or Scarlet
Lady Deathstrike.
Yeah.
Was like, Kelly Hu.
Yeah, that was like the CGI wasn't too heavy. And then the third one, the CGI went crazy. Then Origins, it went crazy. And then it went back to kind of normal for First Class. And then Wolverine had that Shredder, Super Shredder. And then Days of Futures Past had the Sentinels, those lame L Sentinels. But I don't know. But then it kind of focused more on the human aspect. So I feel like X-Men's best when it deals with the human aspect. And then now we got Ivan Ooze running around, played by an amazing future Oscar winner.
You know, and it doesn't even matter to me where they take the plot, because you can do a lot with Apocalypse. But I mean, I just still can't get over how unconvinced I am by just a couple images that I saw, just how crushing I can be of this apocalypse. Like, I don't want to take this bad guy seriously.
Yeah. And you know what else is crazy? We have all the original First Class guys, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, Michael Fassbender, McAvoy, all future or current Oscar winners. Then we have Patrick Stewart, I think, coming back. And then we have Ian McKellen. And then we have Apocalypse. Then we have Psylocke by Olivia Munn. And then we have Ty Sheridan as Cyclops, Sophie Turner as young Jean Grey, Cody Smith McPhee as Nightcrawler, Ben Hardy as somebody, and then Lana Ander, I think, as Jubilee. So it's like, there's like a billion characters. Not a billion.
Yeah, yeah. So while we're at it, like, unless this is like X-Men X2, for example, where you meet a lot of characters, they don't go out of their way to introduce them, like Colossus when he's rescuing the kids with Wolverine in X2. Like, you meet some of these characters ever so briefly, but there's no introduction. You give a nod, you know who they are, it's really cool, and they're off. Yeah. So unless they're doing that with a dozen characters in this movie, I feel like they're going to have so much going on that it's going to be like this kicked bee's nest of Tommy Boy running out of the car, waving your hands in the air, bees!
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to notice what the hell the plot is.
Yeah, and like
we're not going to care.
It's going full on, like, there's two examples of this, like Expendables 3, where they introduce all the young recruits, and everybody consensusly was like, yeah, exactly. Like, they want to see the people they like in action, except for Antonio Banderas. He was awesome in that movie. Mm-hmm. But I think the Avengers have dealt with that really well with the introduction of Anthony Mackie, Don Cheadle, Elizabeth Olsen. They've done a good job of introducing new Avengers throughout the course of films. But this one, I think they're going to have – like, Ty Sheridan was from M.U.D. and Tree of Life. Like, Sophie Turner's from Game of Thrones. Cody Smith McPhee is, like – he was in Slow West and all these good movies. And so I think they're going to use them in future movies. So they're really going to incorporate them. So this isn't like a what up, Colossus. This is like a, hey, how are you? What's your backstory? You want to come help us? Like, it's going to be juggling everything. It's going to be a weird, and it's multiple timelines.
Do you guys think the X-Men franchise is starting to come to an end, or like it's at least getting to a point where it's rebooting? Because the Apocalypse storyline, that's one of the major X-Men storylines in the comic.
Yeah.
It's like, where else do you go after that?
You know what? This is going to sound crazy, but I feel like they added all these characters in there to keep the rights. Because sometimes they have to remake, like, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Sony had to remake Spider-Man to keep the rights to Spider-Man. So maybe they're including these characters so they can keep the rights so they don't go over to Marvel.
Infamous
so
Marvel Fantastic Four movie that came out in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. So, like, so they don't have to, like, send them over to Marvel. But I don't know, man. Like, Bryan Singer, he did X-Men, he did X2, and he did Days of Future Past. So, I mean, he is kind of like the X-Men godfather. So I'm all for giving my money to see him swing away. But I just feel like Spider-Man 2, the villain was Doc Ock, right? That's it. Dark Knight had Joker and eventually Two-Face. Iron Man had a weird Jeff Bridges goatee guy.
Yeah.
And like Unbreakable is not a comic movie, but it just had Sam Jackson. And those are some of my favorite superhero films where there's just small stories and one villain, two villains, whatever. And then these new films like Avengers and all these Apocalypse, there's like I'm looking more forward to Deadpool movie because just Ryan Reynolds and like a few other people. Like,
oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. So like, but Apocalypse, I just feel like it's just the kitchen sink thrown on top of another kitchen sink.
Well, you mentioned it earlier when we were talking about Pacific Rim. You mentioned how in Aliens, when Sigourney Weaver battles the Queen, like you care for Ellen Ripley because the movie focuses on her and her character development. I think in this case, like that principle also applies to the antagonists of the movie. Like, it's hard to become scared from multiple villains when the focus is just on one thing. Yeah. Like, it's easy to root against.
Yeah, and what Apocalypse does is he basically controls other people and makes them his kind of acolytes in his mission, even though he's basically, like, I'm just going to use the word godlike in the comics. So, but he just does it because he likes to. He likes having other people do other stuff for him. So, like, Jean Grey or Dark Phoenix, if you will, like Cyclops, he's taken over a bunch of people. So when he takes over a bunch of people in this movie, it's going to happen. We're going to have, you know, we'll be introduced to Apocalypse. And then after we're introduced to him, he'll probably proselytize some hero. And then we have this scene where that hero is actually a bad guy and they're fighting that bad guy. And then later he'll convert another hero or two. And then we see this other scene where it's a bunch of the X-Men fighting these two evil converted X-Men. And it's not until the very end where we may actually have a fight against our big antagonist, but there wasn't any buildup to it.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole time you're watching that, you're thinking, like, man, I just don't care anymore.
It's more like watching Van Damme going through all these different people in the Kumite, but there's no Chun-Li at the end.
Yeah, well, so you're just kind of sitting there, and you're like, oh, the acting's good, the cinematography's great, the special effects are good, but you kind of leave it. All right, remember leaving X2 when Jean Grey sacrificed herself in the water, and Cyclops is crying, and, like, Wolverine was all bummed out, you know, like...
Yeah.
Dude, like, if I hadn't been, like, a tough college or whatever, I don't know how old I was when it came out, but, like, you know, nowadays if I watched it, I think I would burst out crying because, like, that was a very emotional scene. Like, that's not going to happen in Apocalypse.
All right. Well, we know Channing Tatum won't be part of any of that because apparently they were making a Gambit standalone movie and he was set to star and produce it as well. But I guess there's been recent news that he just left the production.
What happened was there was a dancing scene in the movie. And then they decided we don't have enough room for the dancing scene. And Channing Tatum's like, screw this. I'm going to go do Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what he's doing now?
Well, I heard he wants to direct. There's like a thing he wants to work on, but... I don't know. But, you know, bring back Taylor Kitsch. I love that guy from, you know, he had a couple bombs, right? But he was very good in Lone Survivor and he's in True Detective. Play Gambit? Well, yeah, he played Gambit in Origins and he was really good in Friday Night Lights. Like, I think if they just let him, if they let Kitsch be Kitsch.
No. Like, I still maintain that Josh Holloway from Lost would have been awesome Gambit. Although I feel like that's probably too perfect. It's like,
yeah.
I don't know.
He was basically playing Gambit on that.
Yeah. Hey, Freckles.
Well, again, Channing Tatum is now rumored to or is in the talks for a all-male Ghostbusters script.
Yeah, with Chris Pratt. But then Ivan Reitman just said Harold Ramis said that's not true.
Well, Harold Ramis didn't say that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Ivan Reitman said that. Yeah. So it's like there's just the rumor mill's going. Right. But
I would love to watch that movie.
We got Deadpool, guys.
And that happened from rumor mill. That happened from so much hype from Ryan Reynolds and that perhaps intentionally leaked test footage from years ago.
Air quotes.
Yeah, that accidental test footage that got people so excited. And, like, after all these, like, green lights and then cancellations, I think they greenlit and canceled – 3 different times, all separated by like 8 to 12 months in the last 3 years. And now finally we have the Comic-Con trailer. I don't know if any of you have seen the Comic-Con trailer or the new trailer yet after that. I think this looks like a lot of fun. I think that even though everyone was always saying it, this is probably the role for Reynolds.
It's going to be rated R, right?
It has to be. It's going to be a hard R, so they want to claim.
Awesome.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there was one thing that they said, I think, at Comic-Con. They were saying this is going to be the first hard R superhero movie. And all I could think was, it's like, do they not listen to our podcast? Because we've mentioned Punisher Warzone like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, that's almost an insult. I would be like, yo, my movie. I will bet I will bet you guys, if you want to take a bet, it's very subjective, but I'll bet you guys a $10 Blu-ray that there is no way that Deadpool is crazier and more violent and bonkers than Punisher Warzone, because that's one of the most insane films I've ever seen in my life.
It was just like...
I don't know. I mean, I hope they just make it fun and keep it as close as they can to the Deadpool character within their budget.
I remember reading a review. I don't know if it was actually one of your reviews, but someone described the violence in that movie as a ballet of blood and guts or something like that.
I'll have to look through my stuff. I've written a lot about that movie. And, like, I don't know. The one thing I'm worried about with Deadpool is that they're too in love with themselves, because that could hurt. But so hopefully they're tackling this with, like, reverence. Not like, oh, yeah, this is the best.
I hope it's not like a traditional superhero movie. Like, I hope it's just like a hard R comedy with lots of violence in it. That's all I want. Yeah. I don't want like a traditional superhero movie, because Deadpool is
The trailers don't suggest that.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
The trailers make me think of, like, if I was watching Waiting, but Ryan Reynolds was evil and one of the best killers on the planet and had a costume. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's going to be breaking of the fourth wall, too. Like, I assume there's going to be. There would be riots if Ryan Reynolds did not break the fourth wall in the Deadpool movie.
Now, they're starting to advertise that this is the first ever superhero movie that breaks the fourth wall, but Jean-Claude Van Damme is disagreeing because he said he broke four walls in a. Never mind. That's a bad joke.
Yeah. No. Then he went on to break a fifth and sixth wall.
I mean, in interviews, though, Reynolds is already, I mean, clearly the producers behind this were talking pretty positively if this does well, because Reynolds was insinuating that he'd love to move on to, well, he said two things. One, he never wants to play another superhero, but two, he would like to play Deadpool again in a Cable and Deadpool movie where, just like the comic books, Deadpool is not the lead.
Yeah. I just hate when that happens, though. I hate when they're talking about the sequel ahead of the first one. Like, just make a good one. Just make a good movie. And then, like, you know, like, it's like those fighters who are, like, thinking about their next fight and they get knocked out. Or, like, you know, the United States in the Gold Cup, you know, we lost to Jamaica and we're already thinking about the finals. Like, think about the now and make a good movie now.
Well, so they're already thinking about other characters, right, which may or may not in the future of the Marvelverse overlap with this ongoing Marvelverse. And all these – it's I don't know. All this stuff overlapping really annoys me. When you were watching Iron Man 3, right? I mean, now we're deep in the Marvelverse. We're not Avengers 2 yet, but we're deep in the Marvelverse. And, like, Tony Stark is, like, all down on his luck and stuff, and we're just supposed to assume, oh, I guess while he's having this really tough time, you know, dealing with this bad guy – every single other Avenger is completely indisposed. And even if they were, like, not a text or a phone call, like, it was like he was in a bubble.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make sense to me. He can travel huge distances very fast. He's like a fighter jet. And then a lot of these other people, like Thor, when he spins his hammer, he's across a continent in an hour. So if he really needed help, whatever they were doing, I think that they could have skipped an hour of sleep and come to help him for an hour. And with Thor around, that bad guy would have been gone.
No, yeah. You're putting too much thought into it. Just let it happen, Lemmigood.
Like, and he even mentions in the movie, it's like, oh, the Avengers, they're all busy or something. Like, they're all at a Canasta tournament or something. I don't know.
I guess we got to pull Pacific Rim and just be like, it's big monsters and no. They're fighting big robots.
One of my favorite lines in Ant-Man was when Paul Rudd, like, says to Michael Douglas's Hank Pym, all right, step one, we should just call the Avengers. Ant-Man's a great movie, by the way. For those of you who haven't seen it, go watch it. It's one of the better...
Really? Because I've been intentionally not seeing it.
Yeah, watch it 3D. It's very immersive. It's fun. It knows what it is. It's a cheeky little thing.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about Ant-Man for a second, like, a lot of action movies, I feel like the 3D technology isn't there to keep up with the fast movement of an action sequence, unless the action sequence is more like, I don't know, a fighter jet dogfight with a couple of explosions. But if there's actual fighting, it never seems to work. Like, is this a movie where the 3D works and it doesn't distract?
Well, they invented this thing called macro photography, where they just shot the scene and did the action around it. And since it's very CGI'd, that's easier to do with 3D. What the CGI is easier to fit within that. So the conversion was easier.
Well, you know what it is? It's just like when they're making these movies, they're kind of in the storyboarding it. They're just doing it from the perspective of like, well, this movie's going to be 2D and 3D. If they went into the mindset like, well, this movie's going to be 3D from the start. If they kind of design and choreograph like an action scene or a fight scene with the mindset like, well, this is going to be 3D and we need to take advantage of that. Like, that would look really good. You know, kind of like Avatar. Like, that was designed with 3D in mind.
Oh, yeah. But you like, go.
But like these movies that, you know, a lot of these movies that are in 3D these days, they're shot with the mindset of like it being in 2D and 3D.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I actually prefer 2D movies over 3D. It's just
I generally do too, yeah.
I feel like if you're going to make a 3D movie, like you need to jump in the 3D pool like from the start. Like
yeah, native 3D.
Yeah, native 3D, design all the scenes, all the shots, all the fights, all the action scenes. Like approach it from a 3D perspective. Like that would actually, you know, make sense when you're watching some of these scenes in 3D as opposed to just like, well, we're going to shoot it in 2D. So hopefully it looks good in 3D later on. That's what's happening, really.
Well, I got to say, I think that I've gotten most of my jabs in at the oversized Marvelverse. Does anyone have any additional thoughts about Deadpool, Apocalypse, where all this Marvel mayhem is going?
No, honestly? I think tons of fanboys' heads are popping from Olivia Munn's outfit, though.
I think she's such a terrible choice
She's not a good actress.
Like she's very like pretty, but Psylocke, like well, any comic book character to be honest. I think most of these comic book characters are miscast because you should basically pick people from the CrossFit Games and pro bodybuilding to be comic book characters because these women and a lot of these men really don't quite fit. The guys, it's easier, you know, they work out for a little while, you know, really hard and eat like a machine. They get all buffed up or something. But, I mean, these women, they none of them look like they work out.
Yeah. Dude, Emily Blunt nailed it in Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
she did, but she didn't need to. Well, one, she worked out, but she didn't even need to because she had her mecha suit.
Yeah.
And yet she still did anyway. She came full throttle. But like Olivia Munn, she doesn't look like she does anything more intense than yoga and a little jogging.
Hey, if you come to the MFF yoga studio.
Yeah.
The Pilates studio.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
But I was going to move it on to the Alien movies because of everything that's been going on in the past 6 months with Neil Blomkamp, am I saying his name right?
Yeah.
With Neil Blomkamp, and he's the guy who did District 9, yes, Elysium.
One of my least favorite movies ever made.
He was also attached
to Chappie, which I loved as well.
He was attached to the Halo movie for a while. That never went anywhere, unfortunately.
Thank goodness.
Well, this can kind of, you know, the new Alien movie can almost be his Halo movie if he has a Colonial Marine, like, mecha suit. kind of.
Like, Elysium was so bad that I have no urge to see this movie.
Don't want to see his Alien 5?
No.
Have you seen the concept art online? Because that's what got this started.
Yeah.
Like, he was upset when he put in a bid for this that he never got considered. And so he just came up with all this concept art on his own with no studio backing or interest.
Yeah, because they probably saw Elysium.
And he just starts throwing it online, though. That's ballsy.
No, you know what? I think you're right, Lovingood. And you know what he said? He said in Elysium he was so focused on, like, the idea of the suit and the orb that he left all traces of character out. So maybe now he's focusing on the aesthetic and the characters. So that could lead to a good Alien film.
I'd like to think so, yeah.
But you know,
is it true that that he's taking an approach that the Alien versus Predator movies don't exist in his sequel?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think he's just going off of the first movie, or was it just the first?
The second, because he has Michael Biehn back in it.
Yeah, oh, okay. He's saying that this happens basically, is it between parts 2 and 3?
Yeah.
No, I think he's saying he's ignoring like everything after 2, right?
Which is a shame because 3 is good. Drop 4. 4 is like the biggest pile of garbage, but 3 is don't drop 3, man. Don't drop Charles S. Dutton. Don't put his sacrifice
he died for nothing.
Don't take that guy who got awesomely dragged through the ceiling, you know, like and Tywin Lannister's in it. Like come on, guys.
But, well, I mean, he wanted to bring back Ripley, though. If he wants to bring back Ripley without doing some weird, mean bro kind of Ripley from Alien Resurrection, she was kind of a jerk.
Well, he didn't want to make her a clone that snuggles with an alien?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
I think that's exciting. You know, and that brings me to an interesting thought. So, like, the Alien franchise is really old. Alien is from 1979. Aliens is from 1986. Alien 3 might be like 1992 or 93, I'm not sure. And Resurrection was 96 or 97. So even those are – they're all almost 20 years behind us, the most recent of them. So – and while they're cult classics, and most people who call themselves sci-fi fans today who are only in their 20s may have gotten to see these movies. Hopefully they have. They aren't the they haven't seen them 10 or 20 times like we have. So when you cast Sigourney Weaver and Michael Biehn, is that a smart move, or could that backfire? Because I, 34-year-old John, am thrilled. But what's 24-year-old Frank down the street going to think of it? He's going to be like, oh, yeah, she's that chick who was in these movies my parents like. Yeah.
No,
dude,
Frank is a jerk. I think it's a smart move. Listen. Frank, he's seen these movies. I feel like the stereotype is like the younger generation, they don't watch like the older movies. I think a good portion of them don't, but I think there's a decent enough percentage of the younger generation that watches like these old classic movies like the Alien 1 and 2. Like they'll appreciate this casting.
I certainly do.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Mad Max, right? No one knew who Mad Max was, and that blew up. And then, I don't know, Indiana Jones 4, that movie wasn't very good, but it had a massive box office because of love of Indiana Jones. And then Jurassic World, you know, people our age love the original, so we came back and watched Jurassic World.
Right,
right, sure. And even kids who only know the Alien franchise from AVP video games, because they keep making them. These AVP video games are so popular. Like, yeah, they're all going to go too. Like, I'm just...
This is what he needs to do, all right? Blomkamp, you're in South Africa right now probably drawing up some pictures, all right? This is what you got to do, all right? Listen, put that pen down. Hear me out. Wait, all right, so Alien, a bunch of space truckers, right? They get some alien bursting out of some guy's chest and they have to fight it. Amazing, right? Beautiful. Aliens takes our same character we love, has some very likable Marines, and they just get stuck on some planet battling some aliens. The plots and the movies that these two are, if you're making the third one after these, keep it small. Give us likable characters. You know, we know the names of like Hudson and like all these. We can name the characters from the first Alien and Aliens, and that's what makes them good. So just keep it simple, keep it gritty, and just do what we love. Do what Jurassic World did and just, you know, give us more of the same, I guess, and you'll make money, even though I didn't like Jurassic World. But you know what I'm saying? It's just, yeah, that, all right, Blomkamp, write that down. We're good.
Write that down. And I think that he can do well with characters when he's not doing Elysium. When he's not doing Elysium. But it's so, yeah, I don't really know what they're going to do with this. I thought about looking into some plot rumors, but I really don't want to know, and I don't want to think that I know and then have the rug pulled out from under me anyway when they pull a 180 on it. But I'm very much looking forward to this movie. I don't really care if they try and tie it to the Prometheus storyline or not, you know, like such that it fits, that whatever happens is consistent with what will happen in Prometheus.
What was the point of Prometheus, by the way? Like, I watched it and I left the movie feeling confused. Like, what did I just watch?
You know, there were so many plot holes in that.
But that's why I loved it. Lazarus, I told you about this, and Levengood. After Prometheus was done, my wife and I went to an On the Border. We got delicious margaritas with Grand Marnier floaters, two of them each. And we sat on a patio for like an hour and a half and just talked about what happened. Talked about the timeline. Were they mad? Like, you know, were they mad? Did they come back? Did they want to destroy the Earth because of Jesus Christ? Who was that guy in the beginning? Was he a traitor? What timeline was this? When did this happen? Like, we sat there and we talked. Like, you vivisected this, Levengood. You sat there. You wrote like 3-4 posts breaking down aspects of this movie. So, you know what? I know it had its plot holes, but it gave us a lot of stuff to talk about, and a lot of movies don't do that. And so I love it, and I think it's one of the best looking movies I've seen, despite the fact that Idris Elba sacrifices himself and we don't care, even though he's a great actor. And Charlize Theron runs in a straight line and gets smushed. And staples hold the stomach back together after a C-section. And
in one of the seven best uses of the staplers ever.
And a guy goes up to a terrible looking snake thing, goes, "Hi, cutie, cutie," and gets killed. And the maps go down. The guy who knows the mapping gets lost. I mean, but it looked beautiful and it just gave us something to talk about. And I like that. I stand by this movie.
There's no on borders around here.
I do. But like, just to elaborate on what you just, the last tidbit you just said. So yeah, the biologist was an idiot when encountering an alien life form. And then their geologist / cartographer got lost when his tech went down, even though Idris Elba could see the three-dimensional mapping and see their bioscans of where they were in it, like it was a three-dimensional board game, and they still had communication. All he had to do was say, "Turn around, walk 100 yards. Okay, now go left. Now make another left. Now go straight." And you're, he could have said all that really quickly before they lost comm, because they had comm for like two more minutes.
Yeah,
he was like a good captain. Many stupid things happened in that movie. But yes, I do love the movie.
It's a visual cornucopia.
Right.
Like, if ever it has rained feces, though, on plot credibility, like, that's this. This is the shitstorm of writing.
Honestly, yeah. You guys will just probably disagree with me, but I hope Alien 5 also ignores Prometheus.
Like, yeah, it will.
I hope it ignores Jaws 3. I hope it ignores.
I hope it ignores Ant-Man.
That's a good movie.
Wait. So I have a question between
I hope it
Jaws,
ignores
right?
Atonement.
So wait, how about this? Jaws and Alien, right, are both classics, okay? And then Jaws, well, Aliens is better than Jaws 2, but people like Jaws 2, but the cast got bigger. It went after a bunch of teenagers, so the cast was bigger. Then the third one, it featured, you know, sharks and everything trapped in a sea world. And then the third Aliens was in a prison. And then the fourth ones were about a vengeful shark and, you know, kind of like a clone or a relative. And then the fourth Alien was like a clone of Ripley, who was sort of like, you know, had the DNA. So they really do follow each other's paths all through the line.
Yeah.
I want my Pulitzer right now.
I hope it ignores Indiana Jones 4.
Yeah, what?
I do.
So, and then after Aliens versus, or I'm sorry, after Alien Resurrection, the AVP movies came out. Now, what do you think about them? I mean, the comic books had done them well before, and they were great in the comic books. But I mean, these movies, I mean, the first one may as well just be a video game level.
It's garbage.
You're trapped in a ziggurat that shifts.
Garbage pail movies.
But super fun. You know, so. Like, I read a lot that, like, people say AVP killed the franchise. Sigourney Weaver has nothing nice to say about it. But at the very same time, if you only look at the action scenes, you have never seen a cooler action sequence that focused on an alien or on the predator instead of a human fighting them. You've never seen such a cool action sequence where you could actually see the action taking place. I'm sorry, I got to say, other than the cargo loader versus Ripley, or Ripley and the cargo loader versus the Queen.
Arnold fighting the Predator.
No. That focuses on Arnold. You don't really see more than one swing take place at a time. And I realize it's because they didn't have CGI, but at the same time, the CGI in AVP was buku awesome. Well, you saw them getting tackled and rolling around. The action scenes were amazing.
Danny Glover did a good job in Predator 2.
That was
like
terrible.
The only good thing about that movie.
Yeah, but
that
like
was terrible.
I don't know. Like, well, I'm not gonna, like, in college. My buddy Tony and I, 9.5. We were sitting in a bar one time. He looks at me, and goes, "You know what, Mark? I'm a 9.5 on a scale of 10." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So then his name became 9.5 after that. But we would watch AVP, and like we loved it. There's that scene where Lance Hendrickson goes, "Don't turn your back on me," on the Predator, and he lights the Predator on fire. And the Predator dusts itself off and stabs him in the chest. It's like the worst attack ever. But
it doesn't
count
as an action scene.
Yeah, and we like they're funny, dude. The AVPR is just stupid, and like, but I don't think they wrecked the Alien franchise. I think Alien Resurrection wrecked the Alien franchise. I do think it's proof though that simple is not easy, because if you look at the filming of Alien and Predator, there was a lot of trouble behind the scenes. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme was supposed to be the first Predator, and like there's a lot of bad rewrites and junk, like, you know, like H.R. Geiger did the Alien thing. They didn't want that. So there's a lot of problems, and they're inherently simple films. So I guess it proves that simple isn't easy. I don't know. But they're Garbage Pail films.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Mark, you gave a nice, really simple but elegant idea of how what you want to see in this movie for it to work again, for this franchise to work again. Keep it simple. Give us characters we like. But what do you think that there is to actually add to the Alien story?
Okay.
Like, where can we go from here? Because I thought about this myself, and I can't necessarily come up with a lot.
Yeah, because they're basically, if we're led to believe, they're just tools from Prometheus, right? But if they're ignoring that, I don't know.
I don't know. For me, God. Like, the main character of the Alien franchise was Ripley. And she kind of had her character arc kind of had, like, its natural progression. It had a beginning, middle, and an end. Like, if you were to add something to the Alien franchise, you're basically, to me, adding something to Ripley's story. And for me personally, I don't think you need to add anything more today.
Like, I'm kind of worried. Now, I think that it can still be done well, but I'm kind of worried that we're going to basically get, like, aliens all over again, but instead of Ripley just having seen one alien, she's seen a whole bunch of aliens in a queen and understands a little bit about their behavior, and she now she knows even more what they can or can't handle. So I'm slightly scared that we're going to get a more experienced military, more equipped military version of, like, you know, just bigger and badder aliens.
She's gonna be riding a dirt bike while aliens run next to her.
Yeah,
like a Mad Max chase scene. They're gonna
Jurassic World.
Yeah, Jurassic. They're gonna go. Oh,
Ripley is so cool.
I was thinking of driving into the sandstorm and in Mad Max.
But it's like there's not much to the aliens, and then like there's a scene in that movie Club Dread by Broken Lizard where the killer keeps coming back, and he comes back after his bottom torso has been torn off, and one of the guys just goes, "Oh, come on!" Like, I feel like Ripley's just gonna be, "I'm too old for this shit." Yeah, like, come on. Like, yeah. I don't know. I guess I wouldn't mind if their spaceship crashes, they end up on some planet, there's aliens there, and there's the spaceship, like, 10 clicks away, and they got to get to it. Yeah. Boom.
Maybe there's, like, an Ivan Ooze character running around, too.
Oscar Isaac is going to play alien number 46. Totally doesn't matter. It was Oscar
He should just
Isaac.
Be like a Predator. Like an Ivan Ooze Predator hybrid.
Sir Anthony Hopkins is alien number 2. Like, it doesn't matter.
All right, guys. I think we've come to that point of podcast where we have to wrap things up.
Hello, Clarice.
Yeah. All right, guys. Before we sign off, is there any plugs you want to make?
Go for it.
I was going to say, you know, thanks a lot to our now almost 10,000 Twitter followers, especially Isaac's Haunted Beard. For the question, and Gray at the Dark Hours for the question. We appreciate you. They've given us questions before. I assume they're regular listeners. Most of our material, although not today, is based on articles on movies, films, and flicks, spelled FLIX.com. Please give us a visit if you like. Mark?
Yeah, and I just wrote a post about the future of horror, 2014, 2015. I kind of examined the indie horror boom that's out right now. So if you go to www.moviesfilmsandflicks.com, you'll find my post right there. And
you guys are on Facebook too as well, right?
Yeah, we're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Blog Talk Radio. We're on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you're also on SoundCloud now.
We're on SoundCloud.
Stitcher?
We're everywhere, guys. Yeah. Look behind you.
Right.
Yeah, we're there. We're in the corner.
We're in the pavilion somewhere.
We're CCR. Yeah. We're CCR playing through the speakers of a pavilion.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, guys. For my co-hosts, Mark Hopmeyer.
Kurt Russell.
Yes. And John Levengood.
Dolph Lundgren.
Yes. I've been your host, John Lasva. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
above the target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! 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 This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.